Forever Dog.
Rose and Jamie are two best friends,
and they love Sex and the City.
And they couldn't help but wonder,
do you love it too?
Carrie,
Miranda,
Samantha,
Charlotte,
Cosmos,
Emotions,
Frenchies,
dudes.
So many dudes.
Every little dude.
All the dudes.
And we couldn't help but wonder.
With Jamie Lee
and Rose Cerno.
I'm Jamie Lee.
And I'm Rose Cerno.
And this is
Couldn't Help But Wonder. A podcast where we talk about sex and the city and how it relates
to us.
Jamie.
O-M-F to the G.
L-M-A-O.
I cannot. Listeners, you don't even know how special this episode already is for me. I have not seen Rose in... It's been a bit.
Since you delivered me to a hospital for an appointment.
I did. I picked you up from the hospital and took you home, and you were laying down in my back seat, and it made me very, very sad. But
it's been a while.
It's just really thrilling to be doing the podcast with you.
I'm really happy to see you. And I'm so happy to see you. And I'm so happy to be back at the pod. I literally lost all my will for everything. So I'm happy to be with my peeps doing what's so much fun, and you know, it's good.
Why don't you kick us off? You've got some stuff to talk about.
Before I get into this, I would say, listeners, that the majority of you guys are like, we get iTunes reviews, we get direct messages, and you love hearing us talk about stuff. But once in a while, we'll get an iTunes review that's like, cut to the Sex and the City already. So I'm just going to say right now, go in 25 minutes or something if you just want to hear the Sex and the City review. Just scroll forward.
Yeah, we got some catching up to do.
Yeah.
We've got some non-SATC work to do before
exactly.
we get to that.
Exactly. So,
pure friendship work.
Yeah. As many of you know, and I've gotten a lot of love on Instagram, you guys have been so wonderful. I've had this incredibly debilitating back issue, and I had surgery about a week ago. And before surgery...
She had fucking surgery, you guys. Sorry. That's not small.
Thank you,
That's
Jamie.
Like a big goddamn deal.
You know what's funny is people are always like, oh my God, how scary. I can't believe you're getting surgery. The pain I was in was so scary that there was nothing scary about surgery. I was like... Literally,
you were like waiting for it.
I was like a wandering Jew in the desert, and I saw like water in the distance. I was literally counting down the days every day, and my back had been pretty horrendous for about 2 months, 2.5 months. But
Jesus,
something horrible happened, which is that I went to a physical therapist 2 weeks before the surgery, and the pain went from horrendous to like I don't know how long I can do this type of thing. And so who I was this week, I'm going to say I'm Brady the baby.
Oh my God.
Because
bring it on.
I literally
wore here for it.
I wore an adult diaper one day. I'm literally learning how to walk. Everything the week and a half before the surgery, the pain was so bad that every day I would be in this one room that I'm in now, and I would have to pee and I would have to brush my teeth, but I would say to myself, if I move, it's going to feel like I'm electrocuted. And I don't know if I can do that. So I would get out of bed one time a day crying and just like hobble into the bathroom. And that was it. I mean, I didn't wash my face. I didn't wash my hair.
Did you like purposely not drink a lot of water? Because you were like, I can't even deal with pain.
No, no. The pain was so bad that I peed once a day and I didn't even have to pee. I was just in, it was pretty like there was a day where, oh my God, it's like going to bring tears to my eyes. But there was this day where I was in so much pain. I was just like, I felt like I almost had an anxiety attack because the pain was so bad that I was like, am I dying? Like,
oh my God.
And I was like, oh my God, mom, we have to go to the emergency room. Like, I need morphine. And she was like, it's COVID. I'm 66. I can't go to the emergency room. So I think the thing that was really scary was that like, I had a desk full of pills and I would take all of them and nothing would get better.
Holy shit.
It was honestly like frightening. If this surgery didn't work, I don't even know what I would do. So everything just got really simple. Every day was just like lean forward to eat a little bit of a milkshake, you know, watch something, cry, and like have terror. It was just like horrific. And then, and, you know, not to mention the fact that I was so mad at myself for going to this physical therapist, even though my pain doctor was like, don't be mad at yourself. So many people go to physical therapy and it works for so many people. You didn't do anything wrong. It's just one of those things where I think
you're also like trying to fix it. You were like, I will do anything, see anyone, like just get me out of this pain.
Yeah. And I think what I learned is when you, the universal you, when I am ever, hopefully never in this kind of pain again, but when I think a person is in acute pain, I think it is not a safe time to see a body worker at all, any body worker. I don't care if they're Reiki, massage. I think if your body is completely fucked, you can only see doctors. That is my new thing. Like if my body is like fucked from head to toe, I just don't trust somebody who's not a doctor.
I would say after this experience, you're like, you know, you're pro Western medicine at this point.
I mean, like, for super intense shit, it's literally the
for
only
this,
thing.
For this, I'm not saying that there's no value there. I think low grade
chronic,
like,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. When it's that dire and that debilitating, you
can't put your body in those hands.
Go see a medical doctor.
Yes, exactly. So finally, the day came, I got the surgery. You know, basically, it's actually a pretty minimal surgery. It's 1 hour. They put you under general anesthesia. You wake up and you go home. You don't even sleep over.
And wait, tell our listeners what the
surgery
issue
is.
Was.
Okay.
Or what, what the problem was that you were fixing. Herniated disc?
I had a herniated disc. And the thing is, listeners, your parents, your friends, it's very, very common. And not most people do not need surgery. Most people can chiropractor, yoga. There's a lot of things you can do. Mine was just horrific. And basically what it means is you have a spine with these vertebrae, and in between vertebrae, you have these discs made out of like gooey collagen. And if you do something like move furniture or like fall wrong or do a dance move and tweak anything, pick up a kid and your disc slips, it slips out of alignment and it basically slips onto a nerve. So it's just pressing down on the nerve every single day and it's just shooting pain up and down. And you don't get relief until you move the disc off. So they have to go there and just remove it and like take it off. It's basically, there's a red button that says pain and your disc is just lying on it. And as soon as you take it off, it's literally fine. But until you do, it's just like the messages in your body are like pain, 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 like day and night. And so they just went in and took it off. And then, you know, the incision is 2 inches. It's really small.
Really small, yeah.
And I woke up from anesthesia and, you know, they put so many delicious drugs inside of your body.
Of course.
That when I woke up, I was like, oh my God, this is a miracle. I was like walking and I felt no pain. And I
Holy
had been
shit.
The grossest thing. There's like absolutely no dignity in like the level of pain I had. Like I, you know, my clothes were dirty because I was like eating like, I mean,
what
it's disgusting.
Were you supposed to do?
It's like absolutely disgusting. So like the huge wins were that not only could I take a couple blocks walk, but when I came home, I could like sit up to eat dinner, which was like incredible. And I was so optimistic. I was like, oh my God, Mom, I can go home in like a couple of days. She's like, I don't know. I was like, Mom, the pain's gone. And then I went to bed at 5 and then at 3 a.m, I was like, oh. And it was like, Chucky's back, but it wasn't as bad, but it was just a little, you know, there was just some pain still. And then, you know, every day I've been getting better and better, taking longer walks, sitting longer, but there still is nerve pain. And I was a little concerned about that. And I asked my pain doctor and she said, like, listen, your nerves were like absolutely like just shot. They're not just going to like bounce right back. Yeah. It's going to take them a while. So the idea is that in 6 weeks, I'm like pretty brand new.
Oh, wow.
And hopefully between 2 and 4 weeks, I can drive. And, you know, but we were talking before we started recording and one of our producers, Anna, and editors and geniusers was saying it's like a miracle. It actually is, because I went from being honestly, full body panic to brush my teeth to like casually getting up and making dinner. So that is kind
That's
of fucking
incredible.
Wild. Yeah.
Yeah, but that is wild. I mean, you were. Yeah.
It was horrifying, Jamie.
You were like a limp body. Yeah.
It was so horrifying. And I had therapy for the first time in weeks because I canceled the podcast. I canceled 12 step. I didn't go to therapy. I didn't do anything. I was literally just trying to survive. And I finally went to therapy and I was just like gushing tears. And he was like, and I was like, I feel like Brady, I feel like a baby. It's like, I don't even know how to pick up the pieces because it really like knocks the wind out of your sails. It really is traumatic, honestly. And even if the pain is much better, you don't just like, it kind of like rocks your confidence. It really is like a scary.
Oh, I believe that. Yeah.
And he kind of just put something in perspective and he was like, Rose, you were in like a state of emergency, like fight or flight, like the way people feel in like an emergency. You were feeling that every day for months. Like your whole nervous system is like busted. And he was like, it's going to take you a while to feel like happy and relaxed and
also
confident.
Like to trust your body again because there was a betrayal there as
Are
well.
Are you kidding me? I had PTSD for days after the surgery, even though it didn't hurt that much to get out of bed. I was still really scared. And that kind of stuff, it's like, it just affects your brain and it's just made me realize like, it's going to be a process of healing for my body and for my spirit because this really took it out of me.
Yeah.
But the good news is the surgery was a huge success.
I'm amazing.
Picking my life back together. I'm so happy to be here. I'm so grateful for our listeners. I'm so grateful for the millionth time for Jamie for setting up this podcast and inviting me to co-host. It's such a pleasure. It's something that I like deeply look forward to every week and it adds a lot of joy to my life. So thanks for letting me be on the journey.
It's also just so good to see you and like you're not in the backseat of my car. You're just like in front of my face and we're talking and like,
yes.
It's just a nice, yeah.
Yeah, you've been very loving and, you know, Jamie was very sweet about driving me to things and being totally understanding. So thanks for being a good friend.
Of course. I don't even know what to say. I'm so glad you're not in pain. I'm glad that if you have pain, it's not that kind of pain.
It's like a fucking, it's nothing. It's a different game. So thank you so much. And I know, guys, that was a really long thing. But,
no, if you hadn't done that, I would be like, I need more.
Yeah.
Give me the deets.
You know, it's like you and I were talking and it's like, I do want to figure out a way to like make art about this. And I'm not sure what it is, but this is the kind of thing that it's going to take me a long time to really understand what just happened. Almost,
yeah, I think you need some like space from it so you can reflect upon it. Yes.
Okay, I just need to make an announcement. Just because my life was hell and now is coming back, I still want other people to experience joy and happiness. And anything you have to share, you know, is going to be a light for me. So tell me about who you were this week and
I was
how
so
you are.
I was just so engrossed in everything you were saying that kind of forgot that we were recording and B, have no idea who I was this week. Like, I really just wanted to hear about you. Okay.
Kel, who were you? What happened this week to you?
Who was I? What happened to me?
You went on a nice trip at one point. Did we already talk about that?
Oh, yeah. I went to Sedona.
Yeah. Tell us about that fabulous trip.
Yeah, I went on a trip with a group of wonderful friends. We rented a house in Sedona and it was like a great house for, I have two dogs. My friend has one dog. They all play together. It was completely fenced in. So the dogs were just like roaming free, having fun. And we stayed there for a week and it was just like
gorgeous.
It was just amazing because like I'm working like very regularly scheduled hours. I work like pretty much 10 to 3 every day on Zoom, which feels like 12 hours.
It's so epic
more
to
than
do that
four.
On Zoom. I can't even imagine.
Yeah. The reason I say four is because we take a lunch break. But yeah, it's I just want to let everyone know that I know that the math sounded like five. But yeah, it so I was doing that during the day. And then my friend Emma... she is a podcast host for a podcast that hasn't come out on Spotify just yet, but she's like, doing a crime podcast. So she has to do all these interviews. So she was like working really hard at her job.
Like interviewing people who are like murder experts and stuff.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Or like new a murderer. Yeah. So was working really intensely. I was working really intensely, but then we would finish around the same time and all of us would like go do a really awesome hike at like 5 PM. And one night we even did a hike that like by the time we got back to the car, it was just like pitch blackout, which was like
That's
very
so cool.
fun and kind of spooky and exciting. And yeah, all of the hikes in Sedona are very adventurous. Like you have to really pay attention. It's not like in LA. Like LA hikes, I think, are challenging in that they can be like at an incline and
they're
really
challenging
dusty.
In that your makeup has to look good just in case.
Yeah, your makeup has to look
you.
Good. You have to have like aloe, like head to toe, Lululemon, like whatever your carbon 83, whatever it
freshly
is.
Freshly Botox.
Yeah, freshly Botoxed. But yeah. Yeah, they are challenging. They can be, but this was challenging in like.
Were you like dangling off a little cliff with your pinky finger?
Basically, like there was one hike that was rated a moderate hike, and I was doing full body climbing, and to the point where I was like, I can't believe I'm just wearing tennis shoes. Like I should be wearing hiking boots. This
Adventurous
is so hard.
Jew.
Yeah, it was. I felt like it really was kind of like self-esteem building because there were points where like people in our group would turn back. They're like, I'm good. Like, I just don't need to go up any higher. And I was like, I'm going. So
good girl.
Yeah, it was really fun. And you have to pay such close attention or you will plummet to your death. So the great thing about that is it really takes you out of your head. I totally see why people like go to Sedona to get like spiritually cleansed or
whatever. I love Sedona.
Because it's impossible to focus on anything else when you're doing a hard hike. Like you have to fucking be alert and like get out of your head. And
did you feel spiritual? Focus. Because there's vortexes there, like spiritual vortexes.
Yeah, well, the whole thing is supposed to be a vortex. I didn't really feel spiritual. Although even if I did, knowing my like sort of asshole comedy brain, I'd probably find a way to like talk myself out of it or like intellectualize myself out of it. But the closest I felt to being spiritual was just like, yeah, just like how present you have to be during those sort of outdoor activities. You really cannot be like thinking about work or thinking about anything other than what's right in front
of
you.
That sounds so like so much fun.
It was really fun. So in conclusion, I was a, God, none of those girls would go on a hike.
Oh
I was an
God.
Aiden. I was
you
an
were
Aiden.
Aiden.
Yeah,
wow,
I was.
Oh, that's so
I was
accurate.
A full-blown Aiden. Yeah, I feel like he's the only one. Or maybe there were moments where... No, I was in Aiden. I was going to say there were moments. There was a moment where I was like Carrie when she goes with Aiden to his cabin in the woods.
Except for you weren't a total cunt about it.
At one point, there was a tarantula outside. And I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm not arachnophobic, but I am incredibly tarantula specific phobic.
Oh my
I think
God,
they
you're
are
a tarantulist.
Truly the most disgusting terrifying. I hate. Like, I don't even like saying the word, to be honest. I've called them a T before.
Oh my God.
But I'm trying not to be sound psycho, so I said the full word for you. I cannot.
Wow,
tell
Jamie,
you how much
this
I
is
hate
such
them.
Good information. This is like, if anyone ever does like a newlywed type thing about like how close of friends we are, this is
yeah,
important info.
This is it. No, this is the fact. Okay. A factoid, if
yeah,
you will.
This
I don't
is
know
a good
a
little toy.
Fact.
This is a great
it's
toy.
It's a toy. It's yeah. a toy. But yeah, they are so gross. And so, anyways, there was one outside. And this is going to sound really, truly nuts, but the entire week I was having premonitions, if you will, of I am going to come into contact with a tarantula at some point during this visit.
Your spider sense, literally spider
my
sense.
Literal spidey sense. Yeah, I was like, it's going to happen.
Your tarantula sense.
I could see myself like being on a hike and I see one during the day. I don't know when it's going to happen, but I had gone the entire week and I was like, fuck yeah. Like no tarantulas. I was in tarantula
Jamie?
Territory. Didn't see
you
one.
Were in tarantula
the last
land.
I was. The last night I was there, I was sitting at the kitchen table and my friend Heath, Emma's husband Heath, comes in and he was like, holy fucking shit, there's a tarantula outside. And I was like, oh my God. And everyone rushed out and they like took all these, Heath has this like really expensive, cool camera. And he's like, I'm going to take like close up photos of it. And
no,
he did.
Thank you.
Yeah, he did. And I just pleasantly sat by myself inside while the entire group was out there gawking at the tea. And I was like, nah, not this
Jamie,
one. I'm going to just sit here and watch Netflix and try to believe that there is not a furry, crunchy critter that exists. The fact that it's fur paired with an exoskeleton makes me want to die. That is the most disgusting thing I can think of.
Wow. I have not heard this much passion since I don't even know. This is like a presidential speech. That was wild. If Jamie and I were dudes and we were in our 20s,
vote Biden.
You guys, if we
Biden
were
in Harris,
oh my God, the
no
passion,
fur, no exoskeleton.
You got the part, okay? You got the part. Basically, if we were guys, and I was like, if we were guys in our 20s, I would take that information, and the next time we hung out, I would buy a fake spider and like put it in her bed. But I would never do that.
Okay.
To you.
I thought
I would never
that,
do
as
that
I
to
told
you.
You.
I would never
like,
do that to you.
I know
never.
You wouldn't, but I could see someone DMing
Nobody
us.
Do
I
that actually, to our, Jamie.
Guys, please don't.
Don't
I'm
mail her
you.
Any spiders.
Don't mail or don't just like be like, oh my God, like check out this funny video. And then it's just a T. No. If you do that,
rolled.
You're going to D because I'm going to K you. Okay.
This is hysterical. Well, in summation, I'm very proud of you because I think in a lot of fabulous ways you're a Carrie. So I'm glad you explored your inner Aiden that week.
Yes, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Jamie, well, also,
should we? Yes.
Okay, sorry.
Let's not get into the app. No, let's not. I don't want to go there yet.
I'm sorry, but you took a really cool video. Jamie took a cool video. Like, Sedona's like super, super hippie, mystical yes. wizards. And Jamie had some cool video on her Instagram that looked like a lot of fun where like hippies were just like dancing to yeah. music. Did you participate in that?
Well, no, because it didn't look COVID friendly. People were pretty close. But
tell us what you happened upon.
So, yeah. Okay. So there are so many hikes, but one hike that's very famous is called Cathedral Rock. That's the one that's more like mountain climbing. Like you actually have to use your whole body to get up rocks and stuff. But as you're approaching the base, there are sort of these like plateau, sorry, as you're approaching the mountain is what I meant to say, at the base of the mountain, there are these like plateaus, these sort of like
where you can hang out,
literally outdoor dance floors, like just eroded rock that is very, very flat.
Great.
And people at sundown go there and play music. And I guess there was a dude who like honestly started a Facebook group that's like outdoor summer dance. I don't know. But there was one guy in particular who was clear. It was like his sound system.
Wow.
And he kept saying, as you approached that part of the rock, like, do you want to join us? Please, anyone's welcome. And it just got more and more and more crowded. So
were you wearing masks?
No. Mm. Not a lot of masks in Arizona.
Okay.
Yeah, red state. Shocker. So yeah, it was not a lot of masks and everyone was very close. And but if we weren't in a pandemic, 100% I would have done it.
It looks like fun.
Why not?
It yeah, like a
it was
good
like
time.
So it was funny because some of the music was very like just like a lot of chimes.
Feel your soul. Choo, choo, choo.
Yes.
Feel
yes. Or like
soul.
It was more like world music. And ooh. Then it just straight up was like Prodigy, I Am the Firestarter. Like,
ooh, yeah.
it took a turn into very recognizable music. Ooh.
Also, thank you for not making fun of whatever I thought I was doing.
No, I
just had to do it.
I don't know like, what that was.
I thought it was a specific song that you knew.
I was just thinking like disco
it.
Vibes.
No, it was very like, it was like chime, like,
we might want to cut it out because you might want to record that.
Yeah, honestly,
you might want to hang on to
it. Yeah, I wouldn't drop that EP so quick.
That's true. That's true. You guys are right. Well, Jamie was an Aiden. I was a Brady. Should we hear about the rest of the girls?
Yeah, let's do it. I think there are some other people in this show that we should talk about as well.
Let's hit it.
Okay, so guys, we are on season 5, episode 2. It's called Unoriginal Sin. Rose, take it away.
Thank you, Jamie. The episode kicks off with Carrie struggling. Her column's about sex and relationships, but if she isn't having sex and she's not in a relationship, what does she even write about?
I'm in a dating desert. They're gonna have to change the name of my column to just in the city, or they'll just cancel it.
You're on the side of a bus, for God's sake.
Then why did my editor call? He never calls. I am not getting laid, therefore I'm getting laid off.
You're not getting laid off.
Samantha, I don't know if you read the rest of the paper, but these are troubled times. People with real jobs are getting laid off. This is not a good economy in which to be whipped cream. Last night I actually started writing about my sock drawer. Men as socks.
Socks in the city.
I think you and I need to go find some men.
Oh my God.
There are no men. That's the problem.
There are men? You just have to know where to look for them. When are you free?
No, I'm not trolling for men just to have something to write about. You people go have sex, report back.
I can only help if you want to write about baby proofing.
I'll tell you how to baby proof. Use a condom. What can I get you?
I'd like the veggie scramble and wheat toast. I'll have an order of fries. Maybe I'll make it a two-parter.
I'd like the Denver omelet and hash browns. Thank you.
I'll have the fruit plate and I'm back with Richard.
Richard, whose death we've been plotting?
Well, maybe there are no men.
I finally agreed to listen to what he had to say, and...
I've never known anyone like you, Samantha. I was in over my head, and I got scared.
He got scared? Well, that doesn't excuse the...
Okay, that coming from you is almost as disturbing as the news itself.
I get scared.
I hide under the covers, not between somebody's legs.
Perhaps you had to be there.
Perhaps you're going to have to be there around the clock to make sure he doesn't get scared again.
You know, being scared is not an easy thing for a man to admit.
So what, they get a medal for correctly identifying a feeling? We do that all day long. I feel pissed off. Ta-da!
Oh, Miranda.
Oh, that was heaven.
What a great, great combo.
A lot happening. Also, can we just start with Carrie saying, these are troubled times. People are getting laid off. I'm like, oh,
what
God, they don't even know what's coming. When I heard that, I was like, oh, they thought that they were troubled back then, too. Like, God, if they could see 2020.
Yeah, wasn't that like the
mid-90s? Just kidding. We take it back. Yeah. No, or like early to what is
yeah, this is still post 9/11. So this is like that little, remember there was that small sort of like economic reset after 9/11?
Yes. It's always been troubled times. Now it's just troubling.
I like that she called herself, I mean, it's not a good time to be whipped cream. I'm like, oh my God, what a cute thing to be.
What did that mean?
Just like she's fluff. It's not like she's doing like investigative crime reporting.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't understand that. I was like, why did she say
neither
that?
Neither did I.
Well, I must say, if I may,
let's hear it, please,
that this is very relatable to me because, you know, for my 20s, I was writing about sex and dating for magazines in New York.
You were Carrie Bradshaw.
Yeah. And it was a really weird thing because there would be times where I like was in between boyfriends or not having sex. And I remember when I worked at Cosmo and they would like give me these sex toys to try. And I would literally be like, well, who am I supposed to try them on? And I would have to like call old ex-boyfriends and be like, this is really weird, but can we try like the gargantuan together and stuff?
Holy shit.
I'm not kidding, Jamie. I would have to call exes and we'd like get a couple drinks.
God.
It was so awkward. And then I'd have to like review these toys and it was just really fucking weird. Being a sex and dating writer, I think is really weird because, you know, a lot of people that do it are young or they're people that are in between stuff. It's not like people that are settled in there because then you'd be writing about marriage or something.
Right.
So it's just, it's up and down.
So you guys are kind of like, you're kind of little guinea pigs that are being tested on a little bit.
Yeah. And so I totally relate to her being
like, we're settled down. The editors are like, we're married. We're settled down. We have a house in Connecticut. Like, Rose, you live in Brooklyn and you're single.
Yes.
Put this in your pussy.
Exactly. And I actually think that there was a time when I was writing this type of work that was like in the mid to late 2000s where like first person stuff was really popular.
Yeah.
And like Jezebel and Vice and New York Magazine, people were really eating up these like well-written, funny anecdotes that a lot of women were writing about their lives. It was sort of like a golden age of like personal writing, I think, especially if you were in New York and read the blogs like Gawker and Jezebel and stuff.
And like the hairpin and the awl and
stuff. Yeah, ready for all that stuff. But the thing that was creepy about that.
Hairpin, I remember that.
Yeah. The thing that's weird about that stuff is when you write for that stuff, it does kind of affect your personal life. Because then when you're dating people, they're like, are you going to write about this? And then you're not sure how much. It's kind of similar to stand up if you were just started dating somebody and you're like, there's a lot of like, how much do I protect? How much do I reveal? It's such a delicate balance when you use your life as your art. There's no one way to do it, but I can totally relate to Carrie being like, what am I going to do for my column? And almost like trying to dig at the bottom of the barrel and just almost like try and get a relationship going just to have like material
to write about,
which is kind
of course.
Creepy.
But that's how I feel in comedy as well. I think that's like what you bring up about like, you know, you need to like live to have something to have something to create around.
Yeah, totally.
Like you need that inspiration. It's true. I think about that a lot. Where I'm just like, oh, I should like do something fucking like irresponsible and crazy just to be like, I did something irresponsible and crazy.
It's like, where do you get the material? But it's kind of interesting because I do also think that for comedians and writers and stuff, it's different. It's like writers, like first person writers, like, you know, anyone who writes books of essays, David Sedaris and, you know, Samantha Irby, our friend Phoebe Robinson, you wrote a book about your, you know, Ridiculous. It's like, you know, if that is the avenue, then you have to be doing things. But then there's other kinds of writers like Don DeLillo that just like write about like the slow ennui of like suburban marriages, you know?
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's true. That's why I love that movie Orange County so much.
I never seen it.
Oh, it's so wonderful.
What's
you
it about?
See it. It's about this guy. It's played by Colin Hanks when he's very, very young. And he wants to go to Stanford for their writing program. And it's just about like how his application gets fucked up and he just really wants to be a writer. And he wants to like leave his home in Orange County. He's like, I need to go like where all the brilliant people are. And he's obsessed with this one professor at Stanford and he really wants to take his class. And he ends up finally, whatever, things happen, get lots of obstacles along the way, but he finally gets to have a like one-on-one with this professor that he's looked up to. And the professor says to him, like, you don't have to be at Stanford to be a great writer. You just are a great writer. He like read a piece of,
oh my God,
like,
that's his essay, so awesome,
or whatever. Yeah. I'm telling this very out of order.
He's but like, so should I just go to Chico State and save some money?
No. And that's actually, I mean, spoiler alert, that is what happens. He ends up just going to like whatever his, because his girlfriend went there and he wanted to be with her.
It's kind of like, weird. It's kind of, it's a Wonderful Life type of thing.
I know it is, but it's like a really sweet, yeah, it's a really sweet story. I just appreciated that he was like, oh yeah, you don't have to like keep moving around to be good at something. You just are good at it.
That's sick.
Yeah. Anyways, that's a great movie.
What do you think about Samantha taking Richard back and everybody's thoughts on it?
I feel like everyone's very cavalier about him. You know,
like,
Charlotte like sticks her tongue between her fingers.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just very, this whole scene is so writerly and funny and quippy and all this stuff. But really, like, it's so sad that she's going to go back to him after what he did to her. And I don't know, it's executed very well. This episode, you know, she cannot let it go. And like, that's exactly what would happen. It's like, if you were like, nope, you know, we're going to, you know, fresh, clean slate, like, you know, we're just going to put that behind us. And, you know, our new relationship starts right now. No looking back. It's like, you cannot divorce yourself from a past as hard as you try. Like, I really believe that if there are like issues in a relationship or like a lack of trust or something, like it kind of just erodes you. It like chips away at the goodwill.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that I think is what has happened here. Like the damage is just done. And she really wishes it wasn't that simple because she wants to like talk. She basically just wants to talk her way out of her feelings and she can't. Like you just can't. It's that thing of like the body keeps the score. It's like you can tell yourself all goddamn day that you're over it. But if your body is like, are we?
Wow, that's
like,
a good
way to
put
listen
it.
To your body.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's interesting because it's like, I like what Miranda says. It's like, okay, so he was scared, so he deserves a medal. It's interesting to hear the way women will justify making horrible decisions with men.
Yes, there's so much like put their like their weaknesses, their flaws, their needs, all of this like before your own heart.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I love how Miranda called that out.
Yeah, totally. Right. And I think you're right that I think part of the reason that they're cavalier about this is like we've all been sitting across a friend at brunch when they're like, yeah, I'm going to get back together with them. And you just look at them and you're just like, I mean, what can I say? She's an adult. She's in her 40s. There's nothing, nobody can stop her. So you just kind of shrug it off and say your piece. I think we've talked a lot about like cheating and forgiveness and stuff. And I think this particular example is, I think, an example of something that would be hard to fully forgive because of the way it all went down. And also the way the relationship is. Richard and Samantha seem to me to have a very superficial relationship. Seems like it's really based in like sex and money and showing off and doing naughty things. And doesn't really feel like there's much more there. So the fact that he cheated, it just feels like, I don't know. It's not like, oh, they were fighting for 2 years because they lost a baby and he like had an affair at work. It just felt like he just wanted to. And so he did like.
Yeah.
It feels more like a part of his character than like a flaw that happened that won't happen again, you know?
Yes. Yeah. And also the foundation of their relationship was built on neither of us want to be monogamous.
Yeah.
So it's kind of this thing where, you know, in a way, it's not like, oh, well, I said it at the top of the relationship. So like that's, you know, that's just like, you know, the word, I don't know what I'm trying to say. I guess what I'm saying is like, if you stated at the top of the relationship, that's like, it's not like a contract. It's not like, well, you signed, so you don't get your money back. It's like, no, like, you know, even if you say you want one thing at the beginning of a relationship, like you're allowed to change your mind.
Of course.
Everybody's allowed to change your mind. Your feelings are allowed to change. you know, you're allowed to be like, yeah, I think, you know, I want to keep it open. And then you're allowed to go, actually, I think I want to close it, you know, like,
exactly.
So
I just think this particular incident of cheating, because I think some incidents of cheating are worth forgiving and moving on and trying to repair. But this to me just feels like an essential part of who this person is that just isn't going to change. That's why I think it's sort of like kind of a bad deal for her, because I think she's sort of deluding herself because she knows the kind of guy he is. It's just not that he's just, you hear about husbands like this. Like, I don't know. I feel like my grandma's dad was like a traveling salesman and would like sleep around all over and then can't come home. And she said he totally loved his wife and was like a great dad. And it's like, there's just certain men that you just like, not to say it's okay, but.
Why do you think if it's Samantha? And I don't have an answer to this. I really am just asking.
Yeah.
If it's Samantha, do you think that this would be a hill for her to die on, like monogamy? Like, do you, like, I guess I was under the impression that she wanted to have an open relationship. And then she got to a point where she's like, actually, I want to close it. I just want to be with you only. Or has Samantha always been monogamous, but she wasn't in a relationship that warranted only being with one person? Like, no one fulfilled her enough until Richard came along and he was enough. She didn't need to go outside of the relationship.
It's a really great question. And it kind of just makes me wonder more. It kind of was a little bit like Carrie and Aiden to me. It's like, I don't totally understand what is so different about Richard than the truly thousands of men that she sleeps with. I don't really see what she's getting from him that no one else can get. She is always sleeping with rich, good looking, fit guys. I don't know what Richard has, but I think to your point, I think the idea of this character is that she keeps her heart under a lock and key. And if somebody gets to it, then they fucking get to it. And I think somehow this guy got to it, which personally, I don't think is totally clear why, but for whatever reason, he's gotten under her skin and she feels like love. And so I think this is a completely different animal than how she can normally be.
Yeah. Right. And also, I think it's unfortunately, it's a classic thing of like, he's kind of tough to get. Like, you know, he keeps it cool. He's always like a really even keel guy, which I think is like subtly threatening when someone's just like fine all the time. You're like, how do you do that? Like, how are you so unaffected by the world? Like, how are your emotions not changing? Like, he seems so just like confident, steady, you know, successful. He's just like, life is just like built for him. Like, he just seems so in charge of his life. And I think that's a very hard personality type to get close to. Because he's kind of like impenetrable.
It's probably why she likes him.
I think that's why she finds him so hot. Because it's like, he's kind of unshakable.
Wow, that's a really good analysis. Because I was like, why is it him? And I think you're right. It's because he can kind of like take it or leave it. He's cool as a cucumber. He's kind of her as a man.
But then the flip side of that person, the downside, is that you end up projecting all of your insecurity onto them because they are kind of a blank slate of a person. Like, they're just good all the time. Like, works great. Sex is great.
But that's not real. Nobody's really like that all the time.
No. Right. But I'm just saying in the context. In the context of this show. Well, actually, I think I've met people where.
Have you?
They seem so, like, I feel shook and they're just very steady Eddie. And then I find myself feeling more anxious around them or something because I'm like, oh, like what is that like? And then I just kind of like project all my shit onto them, just like I'm projecting onto this storyline.
No, I think that you have a good point. I think most of the guys that Samantha dates like want her more than she wants them. And they're more needy. Yes. A lot of them are stupid. I think this guy is kind of like her match almost.
Also so tricky when they're like buying your love. Like, he like whisked her away to that, like, you know, he whisked her to like Brazil or something at one point. And then another time it was like the rooftop with Sade playing. And there's just a lot of like,
it's like the
he's got a lot of moves. Canary Diamond in this episode.
I mean, that's why some people some like hip, really smart, cool feminist girls hate this show, like my sister, because they're like, this makes women look so fucking stupid. Like all it takes is like a nice dinner to make, it just makes them look so superficial. And right. I'm like,
here's a piece of jewelry. Like men buying jewelry for women is so fucking creepy.
I don't think it's creepy, but I don't think it's like it's the reason to love creepy. Someone. Don't say that because I want stuff, people to
when
buy
a man
shit.
Buys a woman like a tennis bracelet or something.
Well, it's really like, superficial like, to be like, this is why
Cartier.
I love you.
You're always yeah. like, ugh. Like, I would never trust a man who's like, let's get you some nice real diamond studs. Like, my girl wears real diamonds.
Okay, well, actually, very quick aside,
I'm
binge watching this not that good reality TV show called Made in Mexico with my friend. And it's about like these like good looking rich people in Mexico, this friend group. Mm. And this guy is such a fucking asshole to his fiance and he treats her like shit.
Ew.
And he's like such a macho. But then like the next day, he like bought her like a really expensive thing and like took her on a jet somewhere and she like fully forgave him. And I was like, this is so sick. Like it's sick.
No.
You can't just like be abusive and then buy someone something.
Oh man.
Okay. Well,
that's crazy.
Back in action.
Yeah. Back in action.
Take
okay,
us away.
So, yes. Later at Miranda's, she and Steve do some baby proofing, even though Brady is literally like 4 hours old. I'm not really sure why they feel the need to do this right now, but okay. Brady isn't even crawling yet, but when he starts, they don't want to worry about him conking his head on a coffee table. As they're wrapping up, Steve pitches Miranda on one more little safety measure. What if they got Brady baptized? Steve's ma sure would like it, and even if Miranda doesn't believe it matters, what's the harm?
Over at Richard's, he and Samantha pick up the chat Sam had with the rest of the core four at brunch. Sam tells him Miranda thinks he's full of shit and will probably cheat again the first chance he gets. And he tells Samantha he's not dating Miranda. He also pulls out quite the canary diamond, which is the I won't go down on anyone but you ring. And that settles it.
And Carrie's still dealing with her writer's block. She heads out to play How Many Out of 100 with Charlotte. It's a street game where they mark how many guys out of 100 on the street they would sleep with. But Carrie's too cynical and keeps passing up good guys. It almost goes from bad to worse when her editor passes. She's been ignoring his calls, but he actually has good news. A publisher wants to turn her column into a book.
Woo woo! Carrie meets up with the publishers, played by Molly Shannon and Amy Sedaris, literal dream team, for drinks. They pitch their take on the book, and Carrie tries to match their enthusiasm. They want her to confirm that even after all the breakups, she believes the right guy's still out there. Carrie isn't sure, but she does want the book to happen, so she kind of rolls with it.
Over at her place, Charlotte writes with lipstick some affirmations on her mirror, and Carrie goes on a walk with Sam to talk over her stress about the book. She isn't sure how to feel. They quickly get derailed when Carrie spots Samantha's new Richard won't cheat anymore ring. Later, Miranda catches up with Steve for the baptism meeting, who brought along a surprise.
This is my mom. Mom, Miranda.
Hi, Mrs. Brady. So nice to meet you.
No, Mary, please. Oh, you're so fancy. I wanted to wear my nice dress, but the dry cleaners doesn't open until 10. I was hoping that you'd bring little Brady, since I haven't seen him yet. I mean, well, you know, Stevie gave me a picture I've been carrying around in my wallet. It's a little creased. I should have put it in a frame. I Xeroxed it at the phone company, and everyone in my division said he looks like me.
It's the most intense mom guilt.
So I'll see him at the ceremony. I'm just grateful to be included, especially since I know you aren't Catholic and you didn't want to have a christening. But the idea of this little baby burning in hell.
All right.
I'm just saying. My oldest son, Jackie, had a baby who died. 2 weeks old.
Oh,
he's still reeling. His wife is black. She's not very friendly. Thinks I have a problem with her. But I don't. I don't.
Actress.
Listen, maybe the priest doesn't need to know you aren't getting married.
We're not lying to the priest, Ma.
Oh, now you're religious.
Okay, that woman deserves an Oscar, a Tony.
I mean,
she's a goat.
It is. She recently passed away.
Oh, God, she's good.
Yeah, she's like a New York iconic
Unbelievable.
Actress.
Scene stealer. Yeah,
that whole scene is so funny and crazy.
Great writing.
And that character feels so real.
You know what, though? I was on her side. I was like, you know what, Miranda? I know you're a fucking redhead boss lady that don't need no one. But this is also Steve's baby. And the fact that you haven't even introduced the baby to his own grandmother is like pretty shitty, honestly.
Yeah, I also am like, I don't understand Steve's relationship with his mother because Miranda has not met Ma this entire time.
That's true.
The whole time she's ever known Steve. That's she's true. Never, ever met her. She says in this episode, this is the first time you've even mentioned your mother.
Wow.
But then Steve seems really close to his mom, but then the mom still hasn't seen the baby and they live in the same city.
But Miranda barely lets Steve see the baby. I think Miranda's very protective. I don't think she's very open to letting, you know, she's so like minimal. Steve only gets to be like so much involved. And I think she's a real gatekeeper to Brady, honestly.
I mean, I didn't realize that until this conversation. I was like, oh, that's... And also when Miranda says, I don't know if it was earlier in the episode or later, she's like, I've never met your... You've never even mentioned your mother. I'm like, who doesn't mention their mother?
Okay.
Like, also, Steve seems like such a mama's boy. It's so confusing.
But Miranda's so judgmental and so critical. If he was like, oh yeah, I got like a loudmouth Italian Catholic mom who's gonna...
She would hate her. You're right.
What do you think?
He probably felt like he couldn't. Yeah.
Okay. If you married someone who happened to be a different religion, let's say Christian, Catholic, whatever, but they weren't that intense, and then you had a baby and they wanted to baptize it, where would you be on that?
Well, I think in my particular case, as a Jewish woman, I'm not religious. I was not raised with religion. I still think I would feel a little strange.
Do you think you would say yes, or do you think
maybe
you'd consider it?
I would probably consider it, just because I do think that if it's such a tricky thing, because I actually talked about this a little bit in my book. Like, there's a thing where it's like, okay, if you have less tradition in your life than your partner,
you should defer to
them. Does that mean that you have to absorb their tradition? But I actually think a lack of tradition is just as valid.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
And I think that we, and I'm not speaking, this is not my situation, but like there is sort of, there can be like a bullying that happens. It's like, well, you don't care about religion and I do. So just adhere to me because I care.
But not caring also can be like, yeah, I don't want to expose them to this.
Not caring is caring. Like that's a choice as well,
that's really,
I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying like there's a definitive answer in how to handle this, because I really think it's so personal and it completely depends on your comfort levels and all the things. But I just wanted to put that out there because I think that a lot of times, not just in the situation of having a baby and debating whether it should be baptized or not, whether they should be baptized or not. But I think that in general, like if you are with someone who happens to like have more faith in their life or more, I don't know, family traditions or whatever it is, like that feeling of, oh, I have to like, I just am going to be absorbed into their orbit. That's just like that can be really, really uncomfortable and bring a lot of tension.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if I ever have children, I think I would raise them as I was raised, which is very casually reform. I would have them go to Hebrew school. I would have them get bat mitzvah, and that's it.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have a bat mitzvah and I didn't go to Hebrew school. But Dan did.
Did he like it? I liked my experience.
I don't think I would have I think that type of stuff, I'm like, oh, that's cool. Cause I didn't do that. And I think that would be like, it sounds like at the very least, it's like community. You get to meet
kids. And also,
kids.
If you go to a Reform temple, like it's like lots of people are atheists. It's like so chill.
Absolutely.
It was kind of just like, for me, it made me feel like I learned about like, we learned about World War II and what it meant to be Jewish and that type of
thing. That's the stuff that I would really want, because I feel like I learned that way later in life, which is wild because it's like literally in my blood. And my mom just never, she just like never enforced it. I think because when she was a kid, she grew up in Teaneck, New Jersey, which actually now is like one of the
most Jewish places.
Truly, like the most Orthodox in the United States. It's either the first or second most Orthodox community. And it wasn't as Orthodox when she was a kid and my mom was not raised Orthodox. But I know she had resentment because she felt like it was kind of shoved down her throat.
So she rebelled by chilling out.
Yes, she rebelled by chilling out. And my grandmother was not very religious. In fact, I think either her mom or her mom's mom was atheist.
Jews are notoriously not religious, by the way.
What?
Jews are notoriously not religious.
Oh, absolutely.
It's very common.
But for me, but in my, I think for them, it's like, yeah, but there are a lot of Jewish holidays and there are the other holidays. So you're just kind of like, you know, if it's not as important to truly everyone in your community, or sorry, if it's not as important to you as it is to every single person you come in contact with, I can imagine that feeling a little stifling.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Anyways.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
sweet.
When
sweet deal.
Mary, Miranda, and Steve get inside, Miranda redlines as much religion as she can from the baptism with the priest, and they're all set. Little Brady won't have to worry about his eternal soul after all. Later, Carrie and Miranda head to a Catholic clothing store, amazing, to pick him up an outfit. And Miranda asks Carrie to be the godmother, which I thought was very harsh.
Yeah.
I was like, are you seriously not asking Charlotte? That's insane.
I know. And she doesn't even care.
And Charlotte would love it.
But then she does care. I guess Miranda ultimately did care. Anyways, Carrie and Charlotte head to the Fountain of Belief, a sort of power of positive thinking seminar for single women. As they sit down, Carrie mentions the godmother arrangement, but her casual tone is too much for Charlotte. Being a godmother is sacred, and she won't speak to Carrie until she understands that. It takes about 2 minutes.
And Samantha and Richard head to dinner. While she took his diamond ring, she still hasn't totally forgiven him. She keeps hitting him with the old eating out tongue. Oh, yeah. She keeps hitting him with that old, like, V vagina tongue movement. And
what is that called?
Yeah, what do you call that?
I had to look it up, and there's, like, some,
what do you
there's
call
some
it?
Urban
Pussy
Dictionary
fingers?
Term for it that's, like, vag face, which I was
oh
like, I didn't want to type that.
Vag face is so hilarious.
No, don't write that. Don't write that.
You might
that's,
get canceled, Skylar.
Well, the Urban Dictionary should be canceled on
oh my
that. Because I genuinely typed out, like, the words that I've typed here too into Google because I was like, there must be a word for it.
I love how you settled with the old eating out tongue and two fingers.
So much clunkier.
That is one of the funniest things I've ever read. The old eating out tongue and two fingers bit.
Well, actually,
fucking hilarious.
To give Urban Dictionary props, I do think vag face really quickly gets across what we're trying to say here.
That's true.
See, vag face to me is like what a bulldog looks like.
Well,
it's like just a lot of folds.
Well,
because it's like, it's not like the finger, you know, it's not this, it doesn't have the same, it's not as clear to me what vag face implies.
I have to say,
the gesture part of it.
It
is
hurtful to hear. If someone, if that's directed at you, vag face, if someone called you vag face, I'd be like, shit, I gotta like,
but you guys, I have
a facial.
Or maybe they're like, look at that beautiful vag face.
That's true. It's just vaginas really, are beautiful. Vaginas are beautiful. I'm not vagina shaming.
Context
I am
is
not.
King. But the point
context
is
everything.
The fact that they did it so many times in the episode was so embarrassing, honestly.
I mean, Charlotte's was insane. Her eyes popped. They popped out of her head when she did it.
It's one of the
she like
that,
was
like,
possessed.
It's one of the things that like occasionally when Kristen Davis has to do like kind of bigger swings as a character in the show, you can kind of like
so big.
Oh my God,
yeah, you can
so
see
funny.
Her like getting ready for it a little bit. It's always really
I wonder
funny.
If it's because Charlotte's supposed to be so repressed. So when she gets to be like,
yeah.
quote unquote, fun
She's
or crazy.
So hilarious.
Yeah. She just like fucking goes full throttle.
But basically,
yeah, 100%.
Sam is wearing the ring to dinner. She's doing vag face in kind of a teasing way. She's saying, we're still together, but I haven't forgotten. And then a little test comes, which is a young hot woman passes by their table. And Richard doesn't even turn his head to look at her. Sam is impressed. Maybe he is really done cheating.
Back at Fountain of Belief, Charlotte stands to ask Cheryl, the woman behind the seminar, why her affirmations and putting herself out there are not working. Unfortunately, Cheryl is not a big help. She just insists Charlotte must not be trying hard enough. And even though Carrie backs her up, that's basically that.
At Brady's baptism, Carrie meets Patrick, Brady's godfather and Steve's horned up second cousin. He hits on her before Miranda pulls her away.
It's a nice dress.
Well, I didn't want Brady to show me up. By the way, I think your baby's godfather baptized himself with some bad cologne.
Yeah, well, Brady's grandmother invited the folks from Molly Maguire's.
Well, I know you got your hands full with the drunken skunk, but I have to tell you something.
I'm too fat to be wearing this, aren't I?
No, oh, no, no, you're beautiful. No, it's me. Are you sure that I am godmother material? Shouldn't you maybe pick someone a bit more maternal?
No, I like that you're not.
Well, here's the thing. This is such an awesome responsibility. I don't know my own view of the future. I think I'm possibly one bad date away from bitter. Don't you think that I'm getting a little cynical?
Not compared to me. Carrie, you're my best friend.
Okay, but just so you know, Charlotte's dying for the job, and I think she'd probably be better at it.
I don't know if I believe in any of this, but I believe in you. I want you to be my baby's godmother.
Well, I did spring for the hat.
That is a beautiful scene.
Yeah.
That's really, really actually interesting just rehearing it because I watched this episode a little while ago. That's an interesting choice that, like, that's something that's very dramatic for Charlotte to really want something for it really to matter to her and Miranda doesn't change her mind. That's really says a lot.
I know. I kind of forgot how this episode ended and I was really surprised by that.
I think it's a strong choice, actually.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, this show is so beautiful and it's really cool too, because there's so many different kinds of mothers and women out there. Like, I have a friend who doesn't have a maternal instinct in her body and she's such a brain. She's a PhD in information sciences. She's just a really brilliant, dry person. And she got married and fell in love and he wanted a baby. So she has a baby and she's a mom, but she's definitely more of like a Miranda type mom and she loves her baby. It's not like she doesn't. But she wasn't a kind of person, was like a Charlotte type person. And I like that the show shows these different kind of moms, like a mom like Miranda, who's like obviously going to love her baby, but it wasn't like some big goal. And then they show a woman like Carrie, who's like in her deep 30s and not really sure. It's kind of a refreshing thing.
Yeah, I agree. I for some reason, I was a little bumped by, and tell me how you feel about this. Not logic bumped. The scene's awesome. I don't love how Carrie kind of assumes this like kooky single friend role suddenly, where it's like Miranda has a baby and, you know, Miranda's still Miranda,
right?
Like you were just saying, like Miranda is just Miranda with a baby. But now I feel like Carrie's kind of in this, like, I don't know, just like kooky Aunt Carrie who's like, are you sure I'm godmother material? Like, it just felt very like, I don't know. She was acting as if she was like wasted and like crazy. And it's like, there's just a little undertone of like single shaming to me in that.
Well, I have to say,
the way that was written,
I can relate to it because there's times where I feel like empowered and I love myself and I'm hot and I'm like dating and or I'm in a relationship. But there are times where I found this version of Carrie really interesting and it's not the most fun version. I mean, this is the first time we see Carrie actually cynical and bitter and not really flirting and there's no guy in her life. And I think that there are times, you know, there are times where, you know, her best friend is in love, her other best friend has had a baby and she's kind of like, what the fuck is wrong with me? Why can't I... the love of her life left and then she broke up with another guy. Like, I actually feel, for me, that's not how I always feel, but I found that cynicism relatable. And when she's like,
oh, I completely found it relatable. Yeah. It just made me sad that she felt that way about herself.
But she doesn't feel that way for long. It's like an episode.
That's true. No, I know. It was just a little bump of like,
go ahead, Sky, jump in.
I was just going to say, I also think that while I hear what you're saying, Jamie, with regards to like it being sort of a single shamey
thing. I just
thing,
want her to like feel excited. And like, I know that that is a realistic feeling. And it's totally good
it's
that the show
portrayed it. It's not as fun to watch,
it.
Obviously.
Yeah, just, that's all I meant. It's just like, I just feel like single people are like, my aunt has, she's just been, she was married very briefly, but like has been single her whole adult life. And like my whole family has always kind of been like, oh, And I fucking hate it. So I'm very sensitive to that. I'm like, no, my aunt's a badass. She's super independent. She has so many wonderful friends. Like, it's just like any tone of that, I just get very protective for Carrie.
That's you're upset that people are projecting onto that, but Carrie herself isn't happy with where she is.
No, I know. That part, I agree. It makes me sensitive.
I also think that I was just going to say, it's actually the move she's making is just set up in this moment a little bit more cleanly for me, because it comes from Charlotte's claiming that being asked to be a godmother has real stakes. Whereas for Carrie and Miranda before that, it didn't mean anything. Carrie's had this like check and it like sort of grounds just this moment. But I totally agree with that. There is almost like an insecurity
I just want all of the like, sorry, I wasn't trying to step on you, Scott. No. I was just going to say, I just think the feelings and feeling societal pressure and wanting things for yourself and wanting to change, all that is like super valid and everyone should be going for whatever they want. I just want like single women to like feel like, I don't know. I just don't like single shaming at all. And I'm very sensitive to it. And I wish it was not in the zeitgeist at all. I think it's like so toxic.
Well, it's definitely sexist and it's one way for sure.
It's so sexist.
But I think that, you know, people go through phases. I mean, there are people who are single who are like, oh my God, I cannot be, like, I know people that are like, I'm not ready to be in a relationship right now. I can hang out. Yeah. That's it. But she's not there. I think she's reeling from her last, I think she's like absolutely still devastated from like the breakup.
Yes.
And I think she's just in a low, you know what I mean?
She's in a low. And it's good that they show that. Like, obviously for the show, you don't want someone who's just like always in a relationship or always thriving. Like, it would make for terrible, terrible television. And it is relatable.
But it's sad to watch.
I just
get
sad. Yeah. It's just a reminder that it really is just a reminder. That's what I'm bummed out. It's a reminder that society thinks that way and that like women have to like defend themselves.
My only counterpoint to that is sometimes I think if you're sad to be single, it might not just be society. You could just be a little lonely, you know?
That's true, too. That is a very good point. That's true.
Okay. Take us out, James.
Okay. As Brady gets baptized, Samantha's surprised to hear Richard join in on the ceremony. Afterwards, he even has a moment with Miranda. He wants Miranda to know the cheating was what he said it was. He got scared of commitment and acted out. As Richard and Samantha climb into a car and head off, Charlotte confirms that she thinks they're the real deal, but Carrie and Miranda still are not convinced. The episode closes with Carrie writing her book dedication. She makes it out to hopeful single women everywhere, especially Charlotte. It was so sweet.
Interesting.
I love the way this episode ends.
Me too, but also like interesting to like start your book with a dedication, but also adorable. It's like you haven't even written a page.
She's like, that's enough for today.
I also wanted to say
one sentence.
Exactly.
They like actually rendered it in such a funny way too, where like she's typing in 48-point font on this like
the biggest
on this,
font.
Yeah, on this like text document that like has no menu. It's just the entire screen. It's so goofy.
Like amazing special effects.
Yeah, it's like we need to make sure this reads. It's like she also says it in voiceover. Like
that's
it'll read.
So
guys.
Funny.
Oh my God, it's incredible. Okay, well, this brings us to our question of the episode.
That night, I started to think about belief. Maybe it's not even advisable to be an optimist after the age of 30. Maybe pessimism is something we have to start applying daily, like moisturizer. Otherwise, how do you bounce back when reality batters your belief system and love does not, as promised, conquer all? Is hope a drug we need to go off of? Or is it keeping us alive? What's the harm in believing?
That was some really loud typing. It was like clickety clack, clack, click.
It's a funny question because it's like, the question is like, should you be hopeful or should you be in despair? It's like, I guess I would choose hopeful.
Yeah, I would say hopeful.
I mean, it's not a real question, but is she kind of wondering? Just to put it into context, she's licking her wounds after a breakup. The love of her life moved across the country. She's feeling really alone. And she's just kind of wondering, like, is there really someone out there for me, you know?
Yeah. I think that Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously, I would say.
It's like such a, like, it's like an ice cream or like a pile of shit. It's like,
it's
yeah,
like, do
obviously.
I want to suffer or do I want to feel good?
I know, it's like a no-brainer.
Yeah, so I think we've pretty much answered this. Like, yeah.
I'll take hope,
like,
for 100.
Keep the faith. Yeah, like, yeah, stuff does work out. It's just, you just don't know when.
Yeah, there's this, like.
That's the problem.
Yeah, I think sometimes hope is hard if you're in a weird place, but I think that, yeah. That. And, you know, this can sound so condescending or whatever, but I think that if it's at all possible, and I say this to people because I say it to myself, like, thinking positively and, like, assuming things will work out is actually, like, kind of good for you.
Yeah.
If you can,
there's a really, there's a great, we love Headspace. Rosemary,
oh,
love
Jamie
Headspace.
Got me hooked.
It's really, really good. But they have a pack in Headspace called something about change, like adjusting to change or navigating change. But it's a really cool, set of exercises. I think it's a 10-day one because Headspace has like 1-day, 10-day, 30-day packs. But this one's 10 days and it just makes you aware of, like, everything is fleeting. Like, anytime you have like a bad feeling in your stomach, like, or whatever, you're just like kind of down, like, it will go away quickly. Like, it will cycle into, maybe things are not so bad. Maybe even to, like, actually I'm having a good day. Then it'll cycle back to, like, actually, no, I feel terrible. Actually, I want to die. Actually, you know, maybe I don't want to die. Like, all day long. That is, like, not saying that's exactly the script going through everyone's head, but some version of ups, downs, all day long, whatever your situation is. And the pack makes you aware of those changes. Like, it tries to make you attuned to, like, oh, I actually feel okay right now. Oh, I actually feel like shit right now. Oh, I feel okay right now. And just seeing how fluid it is and how it really is kind of like waves in an ocean. Like, you start to kind of not feel as, like,
clingy to
you don't
those
feel
negative
as precious
feelings.
About your feelings. Yeah, because they all are so temporary. So anyways, I highly recommend that one. I thought it was really useful.
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, I think it's like they have done studies that, like, having a good attitude helps you, like, heal from cancer faster. And, like,
yep.
So, you know, you're allowed to wallow. Everyone's allowed to throw a pity party. This is the fucking pandemic. If your life has gone to shit, don't take what I'm saying and hear that I'm telling you that you should just, like, smile and whatever. But it's like, within reason, obviously, given a choice, it's more fun to be hopeful. But, you know, we're all,
yeah,
you know, we go through different phases. There were definitely phases in the last yes. few weeks where I was pretty fucked. But
oh, my God, I've been so mopey.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But I think
that's why I did that Headspace thing, because I was like, I need something.
Yeah. You know, it's like wherever we can find it, it's good. And, you know, I guess what Jamie and I are saying is versus thinking everything is shit versus hopeful, we'll choose hopeful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tough call, but
wow.
Real Sophie's choice over here.
We went back and forth for days and we decided that feeling good is better than feeling
bad.
The
toughest call of the pod so far.
Yeah. Yeah. Hot take. Okay, cool. Well, this is our final segment. I'm horny for. Sex in the City is obviously a very horny show, so we end each episode by sharing what we are currently horny for. Rose, what are you horny for right now?
I've obviously spent 2 weeks in bed, so I've read every book and I've watched every TV show, but I have to say that I'm horny for my mom.
Aww.
Because this woman, who is 66 years old, has literally gone up and down stairs, in and out of my room 100 times a day when I couldn't, and I could never repay her, but I'm very grateful. So that's that.
Oh, I love that.
Gal,
right,
give us
well,
something fun for the fans.
Mine's gonna be media
good
related.
Yes. Tell us what you're horny for, James.
Well, I have two. One is a book I'm reading called Untamed by Glennon Doyle. And it's sort of self-helpy, but it doesn't really feel that way. It's more of like a uplifting memoir, I guess would be the genre. Mm-hmm. But what I love about her writing is that she has lots and lots and lots of chapters. And some of her chapters are like two paragraphs. And I just think that's like a cool writing style to just kind of break everything up into chapters.
I've heard so much good stuff about that book.
I just love how she'll be like, I have a quick thought about this. And then that's the end of the whole chapter. And then it's on to a next. And then the next chapter will be like 5 pages. And you're like, oh, okay. It's just very cool.
Easy
it feels
to read.
Very like, yeah. And also it just feels very like, this is how I'm choosing to write my book. Like I'm not falling in line with like what I'm told. It's because I the reason I'm so sensitive to chapter length is because I'm working on a book proposal right now. And it's definitely a thing. Like, you know, you're supposed to have a certain number of chapters and there's supposed to be a certain length and like all these things. So anyways, I just appreciate that she kind of gave the middle finger to the structure. And it's just a really cool, it's just a really cool read. Like her perspective on life is just,
I can't wait to check it out.
Thrilling. And yeah. And she also went through a pretty brutal divorce and then ended up like finding the love of her life. And she was married to a man. Now she's married to a woman. And yeah, it's just like
can't
she really just kind of like did the damn thing. It's really wow. Great. Anyway, so that's one. And then the other one I'm horny for is the show that I write for, which turned out really fucking good.
God.
It's called Ted Lasso.
Yes.
It's on Apple TV. And yeah, we're working on the second season right now. But the first season has I don't know when this comes out. But yeah, I think the whole season will be on Apple TV by then. And yeah, I'm just getting a lot of like really nice messages about how much people like the show. And the shows we're talking about, like feeling good versus feeling bad. This is a feel good show,
people need
but
that
not
right now.
In a talking down to you kind of dumbed down way. There's still enough darkness to like make you feel like an adult. But yeah, it's really uplifting and just a really, it just turned out really good. I'm like, oh, I write on a good show.
That's fucking rad, Jamie.
It's really good. Yeah.
That's fucking rad.
It's like, oh, wow, that turned out great. Like when you're writing, you're not really aware of the outcome because all you can do is just like put it on the page. But yeah, I'm just like, oh shit, this is like a really quality program.
So guys, so, yeah. Put it on your Apple TV and give it a watchy.
Put it on. Yeah. And that brings us to the close of the ep.
Okay. I'm just going to say,
love you.
I love you too. This is corny. I say it a lot, but we get a lot of really nice messages and DMs. Feel free to take those and turn them into reviews on iTunes.
Apple iTunes.
It really helps us get more sponsors. It helps the show. And
it is, it really, we can't say enough. Like it really does a lot for the show. So if you like the show and you, not to threaten you, but if you like the show and you want it to keep going, that is a way to help us make that happen.
And for those who have reviewed, thank you so much. You guys are
thank
the
you.
Best. Great to see you, yeah. Jamie. I love you. Great to see you,
okay,
Skylar.
I love
Anna.
You.
Bye.
Okay. Bye guys.
Thanks for listening to Couldn't Help But Wonder. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at CHBWPod and follow my co-host Rose Cerno on Insta and Twitter at Rose Cerno. And please follow my co-host Jamie at ReallyJamieLee on Instagram and at TheJamieLee on Twitter. And please rate, review, subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app if you're nasty. It helps us, it helps you, it helps everyone.
You nasty. Bye.
Bye.
Forever. Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production, executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcast.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Forever Dog Team and liking our page on Facebook.